Okay. We're rolling?
Yes.
All right. Good evening and welcome to the Hipsid podcast with me, Rabbi Simcha, and our producer, Cheryl Barkley.
Shalom. It's Cheryl now, apparently. Hasidic hipster girl. Thank you very much for that.
Okay. Cheryl, not to spread the Jewish guilt, but you missed Shavuos.
You've missed
Passover and now you've missed Shavuos. You told me you were working.
I was.
I've been insta-stalking you, and I saw that you've been on an 80s Facebook binge.
Okay, let me turn it around for a second. How can you insta-stalk and do it a religious
After
holiday?
After the Yom Tov, Cheryl.
I was working. My friend has a photo booth. You can hire him, quick draw photo booth. He goes to weddings. It's great. You go in this photo booth. He does a shoot with you, and he's in character. So there's different characters that you can hire him to do, and this one was an 80s character. So as you're in the photo booth, you're not in the 80s, but he's in the 80s, so you're listening to 80s music. He's taking your picture, and it brings out the best of people when they're in a photo booth. Because sometimes when you're at a wedding, you're acting really proper, and this kind of crazy character gets the shot. And so I was his assistant wrangling people into the photo booth, and I was dressed 80s as well. We were in Peekskill, New York, which was lovely. But I was thinking about a holiday. I was. I remember.
As excuses go,
that's
right up there with the dog ate my homework. Okay, Cheryl, there are three pilgrim holidays. There is Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot. So you have, it's at the end of the summer. I'm asking you right now, Cheryl, will you be attending dinner in the Sukkah?
Yes.
All right, great. So you know what the rabbis
did it in Israel last year, which would...
Did it under the stars. Okay, Cheryl, we'll begin with the mail. It's coming in dribs and drabs. Okay, so Jonathan Posner in London, England, noted after the last show, up to date with the podcast, loved it, keep them coming. Very nice. Hanala, who, by the way, is quite a famous musician in Jerusalem. She goes by Hanala. She's like the Jewish Madonna. And she responded, that was emoji thumbs up. So before we get on to our featured guest, we also have joining us on the podcast this week a dear, dear friend of mine, soon to be senior at Pratt Institute, Mia Kaplan. Say hello.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Mia from Israel.
Yeah, from both. I'm from here and there.
Mia, did you ever expect to be so close when you joined Pratt with the rabbi?
Well, actually, even though I lived in Israel for 11 years from the second grade and until I came to college, I was never really considering myself religious in any way. I grew up in a completely non-religious family, and I came to Pratt and I met Rabbi, and I definitely became a lot more connected to the Judaism side of me. And even if it's just the traditions and going to Friday night, being part of the community, wow. It's definitely a very surprising experience.
Mia, permission to go there.
Go wherever you want.
Okay. You actually once said something to me, which in all my years with the Rabbi of Pratt, this was perhaps the nicest thing and the most heartwarming thing that anyone has ever said to me.
Oh, God.
Okay. It was the night after the Miss Maisel's Hanukkah party, which Cheryl actually did attend.
Time to drop the Cheryl.
Okay, fine. Which Sherry did attend, unlike Shavuot. And so we had this incredible party, Sherry, right? I think it was quite the party, quite the shindig. And the night after, I was doing a nightly menorah candle lighting ceremony in Pratt. That particular night, I think you were the only person that attended. It was just me and you, Mia. And on the way out, you said, Rabbi, you know, this is the most Jewish I've ever felt in my life. And on the inside, I cannot tell you how meaningful and how beautiful and how inspiring. And I want to thank you. And I treasure, you never expected to be close to the rabbi of the art school. I never expected to be the rabbi of the art school. So it's a good shidduch. And if you could tell the listeners what you're doing over the summer, because it is super cool.
Well, I am currently being hired by Macy's as a freelance designer for the window displays in Herald Square. So we just set up Pride last week. I definitely recommend to take a look at it. The displays are breathtaking. It was a lot of labor, but I think that it's definitely worth to take a look. There are a lot of different things to see.
The windows of Macy's Herald Square, perhaps, you know, the most prestigious retail windows of any store on earth. Mazel tov, I think it's amazing. I'd like to ask you on the podcast, no pressure. Perhaps I'm thinking Rosh Hashanah, you could get me in a window, something Rabbi Simcha-esque.
You have to talk to corporate, so we'll see.
If you don't mind, could you please talk to corporate? And also, if you'd like to tell the listeners about the growing animal sanctuary that you're fostering at home.
Well, currently I have 5 cats in my apartment. I have my own adorable daughter, Isla, a 7-month-old kitten. And then I'm also currently fostering 4 6-week-old kittens from an animal shelter until they're old enough to be able to be adopted.
All right. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love them.
What do you think about that, Sherry?
Inspiring.
Okay, Sherry, are you ready? Are you ready for tonight's guest?
Yes.
He's looking pensive in the corner.
He also just studied all the VHS tapes.
Look too closely at the VHS tapes on Sherry's shelf, because you may see things that perhaps you shouldn't see.
I think I see my whole childhood up there, actually.
I hope you don't have mine. Okay, moving on. Okay, so tonight's guest, are you ready, Mia?
I'm ready.
Okay, so tonight's guest, we have Marco Deshev.
Close enough, Deshev.
Okay, tonight's special guest, we have Marco Deshev. Marco, say hello.
Hello.
I'm going to read out your bio. It's beautiful. I edited the bio slightly because there were various names I couldn't pronounce. We're going to read out the bio, okay? It's impressive, and it's meaty, it's lengthy, it's creative, and it's inspiring. Okay, Marco
Deshev.
Thank you. Is a New York City-based commercial photographer. Marco was trained by and worked for many of the most famous photographers working today. Woo. Marco started his photography career shooting for fashion brands and magazines in the early 2000s.
I
call them the noughties. Okay, in the early noughties. Marco's work was first debuted in Surface Magazine's second avant-garde... This is a mouthful. Okay, back up. Surface Magazine's second avant-garde contest winner's issue.
Yeah, it's really prestigious. I mean, it was at the time. I don't even know if Surface Magazine is still in business.
If I don't know it, it probably is prestigious.
It was very avant-garde, just like the title says.
There you go. Okay, your clients include J. Crew, nice, Ann Taylor, Club Monaco, or Monaco, Ralph Lauren, Burberry's, Bloomingdale's, Hugo Boss, Alexander Wang, wow. That's him. You know, if you want to get into Macy's, maybe Mia could. DKNY and others. Okay, in addition to fashion and commercial work, Marco's portrait photography includes his recent series of leading Orthodox rabbis, which we're going to get into soon. Marco lives with his wife and family in Crown Heights. What do you do and why do you do it?
Oh, goodness me. Where do you want me to start? I do
origin stories.
Origin stories. We should really start at the beginning, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so when I finished art school, I started assisting for a bunch of photographers. I had met my wife the summer that I started assisting. She actually helped me get some of those gigs.
You met your wife in art school?
I met my wife outside of art school. She was visiting the States, and romance happened. That was it. It was in the Village in Manhattan.
All right.
Yeah. So we met, got married pretty shortly after. I started assisting photographers.
Wow.
And the way it works with the assistant world is that you sort of hopscotch from one photographer to the next, and hopefully you jump up the ladder, rung to rung. So I did work with a lot of different photographers. I worked with wedding photographers, portrait photographers, news press photographers, fashion photographers, and for whatever reason, fashion seemed to be what felt naturally good for me. And I ended up shooting it. I started assembling a portfolio while I was assisting and while I was working for all these fashion photographers. And then I started shopping that book around to fashion clients. And that's how in 2005, after...
The book is the portfolio.
The book is a portfolio. Portfolio is a book. They don't have those anymore. Everybody's on the iPad. So you don't even carry around this like 11 by 14 portfolio.
So you go
case.
Around, you schlep in the portfolio.
Yeah, you go around, schlep the portfolio. You have to go and pick it up physically. There's a lot of schlep that doesn't happen anymore. Now it's just, you know, fire me an email and then nobody ever looks at the email. The book you're actually trapped with. In a way, maybe it's better to have a book these days. But yeah, emails are not happy about emails. So
okay, I'm off topic, Marco.
Yeah.
But that's how we roll. I believe that we first met in Park Slope through Rabbi Shimon Hecht and B'nai Jacob. You were part of
and
the
Raskin.
Community, Rabbi Raskin. I believe that's how we met, and how I think we came to sort of connect with each other. Much like me, you seem to have gone on a bit of a spiritual journey. I get the feeling the beard has grown significantly. By the way, Sherry and Mia, don't be fooled by the beard, because he could pull a few pins out and drop some serious anchor over here.
Almost as serious as yours.
I think even more serious. So at what point did you become more involved Jewishly?
I'd say right around 2003.
And what was the synthesis for that?
My wife and I had been living in Miami, and then we moved back to New York. We ended up in Park Slope, Brooklyn. My wife looked for services for us to go to. And it ended up being the gig, the local gig there was Shimon Hecht in Park Slope.
Okay.
So we fell into that community in a good way for more than 10 years. And we still bounce back there every once in a while, say hi, have a meal. They're great people. Very warm. It was an excellent place to go.
What role does the artist have in society?
I think the answer is actually the same for both. It's the search for something to say. And hopefully it's something that's worthwhile and something that'll resonate with other people. The whole Jewish journey from the early 2000s onward really sparked an inward movement to say, like, okay, there's something that I can do. There's something that I can do with photography that actually speaks. It actually speaks. It means something to other people, and it certainly means things to me. And the way I happened onto it was, I can for sure say that there was a lot of motivation from my wife, who said, you need to do something meaningful, and you're in Judaism, you're in Yiddishkeit, so this is where you're going to make it count. So with her support and unending support, really, I jumped into it. So where does this go? This goes to making meaningful pictures and hopefully meaningful content that goes with it, so that people will be moved to see Judaism in a new light. It's moving for sure.
Okay, so I was going to save the Rabbi Project for the end, but you're going there, so let's go there. Side note, we're recording this podcast not in the RV, but in Cheryl's apartment, and I'm looking at the VHS shelf over there, Cheryl. Normally, a person would have one VHS copy of Overboard. Why would you have two VHS copies of Overboard side by side?
I'm going to make an executive producer's decision and get back to the questions about the Rabbi Project.
One of them's widescreen.
Okay, so one of the things that I think resonates with me, Marco, is the fact that you have this incredible gift. For those listeners, I absolutely recommend you go to Marco's website. His work is absolutely amazing. But I think that the fact that you've chosen to use that gift, to use that talent and synthesize it with your spiritual growth, with your connection to Judaism, and that to leave, I'm guessing the fashion industry, you may find it, conspicuous consumption, but I'm guessing it pays quite well, judging by the quality of the fashion photography. It's probably quite a I'm guessing they pay more than the rabbis. But you have chosen for the past several years to take on a project called the Rabbi Project. If you could tell the listeners about the project, the synthesis, the genesis of that project, where it's taken you and where it's going to take you.
Oh, So he's the synthesis and the genesis. Those are incredible terms. Where do we start? We're pretty much getting to it with what I just said before. I really didn't want to take fashion pictures and let that be my legacy. That didn't really seem something that I could be all about. And I started taking portraits of rabbis, and a few of them seemed pretty inspirational to me. And I started to go down a list of all the ones that I thought were really out there and making a difference in the world, and telling people new angles on Judaism that they didn't know. And it really relates to what I was saying about how is there such an unawareness of Judaism among the Jewish population.
It started with one rabbi and just kind of mushroomed from there, or you had this kind of concept, this overriding
The overriding vision started in the beginning, totally in the beginning, before even the first portrait was shot. So the overriding concept in the beginning was to create a fine art book of photographs of all the interesting rabbis who are out there spreading the wellsprings of Hasidism, of mystical Jewish thought and philosophy, and you know, portraying them in a way that people could consume the images and be interested in these people enough to go and look at what they do, or read what they write, or hear what they teach, or watch a video that they produced to enrich their Judaism. So that was the idea, still is the idea, and it's very much how this project has been progressing. So after all these years, about 4 years or so, and I feel kind of strange saying it because I should really have more at this point, but, you know, I'm a working person and all this is out of pocket and out of my own production time.
So how many rabbis have you photographed?
Over 80.
Wow.
Which is not a small number if you think about it.
Yeah, that is very inspiring. He chose, instead of photographing Naomi Campbell, he chose to photograph Rabbi Simcha, which is, as far as I'm concerned, equally photogenic. So at this point in the podcast, we're going to open it up, and I want to bring on the Rabbi Project. So, Sherry, we have a laptop over here.
We're going to punch it up. You can go to the rabbiproject.com.
We're going to get to the rabbiproject.com, and we're going to look at some of the work. It's absolutely beautiful work. And... You launched the website recently?
Website's been up and it's been building as I've been putting content on there for the past couple of years.
And what's been the feedback?
The feedback's been great. There's a lot of people who love it, and there's a lot of people in the outer circles of the Jewish culture that this is centered in that are saying, like, okay, it's the Rabbi Project and it's beautiful. I get it. But where are the women? I'm not going to address that question just yet, because that kind of thing does need to be addressed, but not in this conversation. But the overwhelming response has been like, this is incredible, this is beautiful, nothing like it exists.
Right.
And it needs to happen. There's a lot of people that truly believe in it. And as much positive feedback as I get at that, I also get a lot of constructive criticism about what I'm leaving out.
I don't think there's much negativity. And I sort of understand that, you know, there's traditions of modesty. And I think, a photograph is something that's very intimate. And you chose to really light the photographs to the most professional and creative stretch of your artistic talents. And I think perhaps, you know, photographing Rebbetzins in that very intimate space, I think maybe, you know...
I don't think it would translate the same way.
I don't think it would translate the same way. And I think I think there is plenty of room for somebody else to open up the Rebbetzin project, and I think it would be an incredible endeavor. Oh, there we go.
Hey, there he is.
So right now, just to explain for the listeners what's going on, Sherry has right now on the big screen, we are going through the Rabbi project. These are the most inspirational and good-looking rabbis. Sherry, could you explain for the listeners, who are we currently looking at?
We are looking at Rabbi Simcha Weinstein. Oof. And it's these are beautiful photographs. It's like you said, they really could be the first thing I said when I saw them is it could be out of the pages of a Vogue. You know, I'm getting serious Annie Leibovitz vibes. The lighting is amazing. The expressions, the focus, everything. It's beautiful. It is. I mean, I know it's not intentional to bring high fashion into it, but the influence or just the technology is there. And it is just one of those things, like the reason of fashion photo draws you in because it's a beautiful model, but in this case, you know, it's also beautiful. It's just in a different way, and it does really make you go think. A beautiful role model. Nice. That was okay. Off mic. Oh wait, I just want to say one thing. We'll dive into it. Having hung around the Jewish, you know, getting to know more rabbis, especially through this podcast, it's exciting that I recognize some of these rabbis, and it gives me a sense of community to look at these pictures as well. One thing I want to note real quick before we just start going down the list here is that your portrait, most of them are in black and white, but yours is in color, which I wonder if that's intentional because you are such a colorful personality. Was that a choice that you made?
I wish I smiled in that
picture. I default to black and white. Somehow he ended up being the color one. Like he punctuates the page.
Slipped through the net.
There's just a few color ones. He happens to be color, but he's a colorful guy.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm also the only one
not wearing a black hat.
All right, anyway, so how do you want to do this? You want to scroll through?
I think we should scroll through. Mia, okay. Any comments on the Rabbi Project?
Yeah, well, in general, I think this is a very powerful project. Even if the fact that there are some negative attention to it, it means that you need to continue with it. I definitely agree with that the attention that it's getting, if people are talking about it, then you need to continue and see and follow through and continue to get that kind of feedback because you're just going to grow from that as well. Another thing is regarding the color. I know that black and white is normally very flattering. So Rabbi was just so handsome enough that he didn't need the extra flattering black and white, you know,
clear out
all the blemishes. He's perfect just the way he is.
Take note, Macy's.
Yeah.
Also, as I'm looking at these photographs, there is something, you wouldn't, I think, normally think of a rabbi as photogenic, as sort of like, you know, model material. However, there's something, you know, I think there's a look to a rabbi, especially
yeah,
a traditional rabbi. You know, the scraggly beard, the colors, that even though there is a uniform sense of dress, there's a nuance to each rabbi, how he wears his hat, how he holds his jacket. And you know, it's very unique.
You can't say very unique. You have to say unique. I'm sorry. It's a pet peeve of mine. You can't use an adjective or unique is unique. Wait. I wanted to tell you
Sherry, edit that.
So don't edit that. So what I want to tell you is you were talking about the black and white color thing and I It's not canned speech to say what I'm going to say. So here's the deal. There's a really famous fashion photographer who was very inspirational to me when I was in that world, and his name was Herb Ritz. You guys maybe heard of him. He had a big retrospective that traveled all the big art museums.
Obviously. Never heard of him.
And his whole philosophy for pictures was that you make it absolutely as simple as possible and as beautiful as possible in that simplicity. And that's what will really suck people in. And it's true. The most successful pictures are the simplest ones. Now, how does that apply to color in black and white? When you have a color photograph, people are looking at everything. They're looking at the blemishes. They're looking at rosacea. They're looking at pores. They're looking at what have you, the red tie, the weird, whatever. Color portraits really begs people to analyze a lot of things that they wouldn't do in black and white. Black and white is really about form and line and contrast. And I definitely didn't want people to be invited in to critique hygiene or other things when it comes to these pictures. So that for sure, I don't want to demystify my thought process is here behind the whole idea of making it mostly black and white, but that's definitely a huge consideration.
Ah, beautiful. Okay, Marco, permission to go there? This is quite the selection of... I, you've never seen so many rabbis in one rabbi project. So do you have a personal favorite?
Oh, you have to categorize that. There's a personal favorite of like how they look.
I guess or, if you had to pick one from, oh wow, look at that one. Who's that?
That is Velvel Goldstein, the Chatzatzker Rebbe. He's actually a comedian, and I think he runs a girls' orphanage, or collects funds for it all the time. Travels the world collecting money to support them.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a very interesting guy. Very boisterous.
Yeah, he looks, for want of a better word, labor dick.
Oh, so this picture that's up right now is of Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Paltiel, Yossi Paltiel. If I have to pick favorites among my portraits, he's one of my favorites because he's an encyclopedia of Jewish mysticism and Hasidism.
Like myself.
Like yourself. And his character when he teaches is one of, it's a bit manic, which is a manic in a good way. I can
like,
only describe
like myself.
It. And so often people will interrupt him and raise their hands, and he's so much into where he's going with what he's teaching that he often takes this long breath before he ever answers the question. So somebody interrupts him, and then there's a good 5-second pause where he's just like, okay.
It looks intense.
It's very intense. But the learning with him is completely different than anybody else. So I approached him because I am so much in love with how he teaches, and I think the portrait sort of speaks to that character of being like the genius teacher who is giving it over to you real, and please don't stop me because I have so much to say.
I know most of the rabbis in the photographs, and not only have you captured the rabbis, you seem to have captured the essence of the personalities of the rabbis. Was that something you were conscious of whilst taking the photographs?
My process is to talk a lot while I'm taking pictures.
To put the subject at ease.
I mean, that would be the goal of talking to a subject when you're taking their portrait. I kind of think that most of these guys were at ease. Most of these rabbis were at ease. Like Shlomo Yaffe, you just scrolled past him. I don't know how much you've spoken to him or heard him speak. He's also one of these guys that can just go on for hours.
And, yeah, you don't really speak to Rabbi Yaffe. You just get
you receive. Yeah.
Yeah, you just receive. Yeah,
and that's what he was doing. Actually, in that picture, he's totally in the middle of saying something, and that was exactly the way that he should appear. So yeah, I mean, part of it is for sure put them at ease. Most of it is because rabbis talk,
right?
You know,
right. So we know in the fashion industry, right? So the fashion models can be known to be divas, can have a little bit of perhaps ego, attitude, without naming names. If you could just point, was there any diva rabbis, or the rabbis were very receptive to the process?
Everybody's been really different. Some people give me 2 minutes, some people give me an hour. So if I had to define diva as somebody who is particularly difficult to take a picture of, I think none of them were particularly difficult. I think physically,
right?
Physically, the most difficult and taxing portrait I ever took, and also I blogged about it on my website, was Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, who actually at the time that I photographed him,
photograph, by the way.
Thank you. That was in the space of 12 minutes.
Really?
Yes. Two nice portraits in the space of 12 minutes. I took a lot of portraits.
It was in his home?
It was in his home on the Upper West Side. And it was, I closed the camera and wrapped the gear out, and it was about 30 minutes before Shabbos. And I had to go all the way from there to Crown Heights.
He's a busy guy.
Yeah. I pretty much broke every traffic law on the way home. But what I wanted to say about
that. He said, you got 10 minutes?
It wasn't like that, actually. His personal assistant had the flu, so she was out, and the fill-in didn't get the message. He didn't get the message, didn't get the memo. But I showed up at his place all ready to go with two different sets, like this portrait set with this lighting, that portrait set with that lighting, waiting for him to show up like a good celebrity photographer does. I had boot camp for this kind of photo shoot because I knew what I was getting into.
Right.
But he showed up an hour and 10 minutes before Shabbos, and he looks at me and he goes, I'm really sorry, nobody told me that this was happening today. I'm gonna go upstairs and change. I'll be right back. Well, so he was really great about it, and he was like the only one that it was really hard to get a hold of in that way.
Right.
Yeah. There are other rabbis that have been snubbing me all along the way because they're too busy or they...
they're too busy and I'm going to be vulnerable with you. I think rabbis are also a little shy. It's actually easy to kind of perhaps have a public persona. And I know myself...
And not be photographed?
No, I'll give you an example. For me... Sherry's going through her Instagram right now. We're looking at a photograph of Mare Kay, who previous guest of the show, is wearing what can only be described as a Hanukkah onesie.
It's the best outfit ever created.
Can you describe the Hanukkah onesie photograph, Marco? Where did that take place?
This is in my home studio. I have a studio in my home, which is...
So he came in with the onesie on?
He didn't come in with the onesie on. I think he was wearing like a flannel plaid shirt. He looks like a hipster.
Right.
Very much fulfilling that role. He came in and he's like, so what do you want to do? I said, well, let's do a bunch of the flannel shots and then whatever else you want to do. So he says, great, I have just the thing. So we did the flannel shots and he hopped around on set for a bit. And then he pops out of the bathroom 5 minutes later and he's wearing the onesie.
And sales of this particular onesie just went through the roof after this was posted.
I actually told him, I said, you need to give this to Macy's. And then, because he got that at Macy's.
Well, Mia can help with that, by the way.
Right. So the next holiday.
Get him in the window.
You need to get him in the window for a day, just sitting there posing with the onesie. So I told him, I said,
talk to corporate, Mia.
You need to send this to Macy's advertising department. I know the guy. I told him. This has to be on a city bus. Come on.
It's a great picture.
Yeah.
Okay, so Sherry, if we can go back to the Rabbi Project, we're going to go around. If we could pick our favorite Rabbi Project picture, me aside, because obviously that's everyone's favorite. So Mia, would you like to tell us which is your favorite photograph of the Rabbi Project and why?
And I can't pick the Hanukkah onesie.
You can't pick the Hanukkah onesie.
Okay. I can't pick you either.
You can't pick me either.
Okay. Well, I saw one earlier that it was one actually that was in color and his eyes were facing downwards. I'm not sure.
It's like an older
yeah,
rabbi?
Yeah, an older gentleman,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He just seemed like he was very vulnerable. And I think you were mentioning earlier how a lot of rabbis do tend to be like more shy personalities, even if they're not like a public persona. It was just, it seemed very real. I have such a great story with that guy. Yeah.
Just, what was the name of the rabbi? Oh, here we are. Here we are. I think we're here.
Up. That's Rabbi Schneer Zalman Yudkin, this guy?
Yeah.
Okay, so this this rabbi grew up in Riga, Latvia, before the war, of course, yeah, and attended a bunch of yeshiva, attended yeshiva with a bunch of famous famous characters. And when he came to the States, he is a fundraiser, a traveling fundraiser, so he'd go and raise funds for needy families, for schools, for whoever. And I had no idea that he has this kind of notoriety, but once I started posting this picture, I was getting emails from literally all over New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Boston, different people saying, oh, Rabbi Schneer Zalman, we know him. I remember him from when I was young. He'd come and like he'd collect funds and he'd be with us, sort of like a hidden legend. How did I photograph him? I was hired by Ami Magazine, which is the largest Jewish weekly magazine in the world, I guess, aside from Mishpacha or whatever. Anyway, so they hires me for this job, and it wasn't exactly to take this rabbi's portrait, but Rabbi Yudkin was there with his son-in-law, I think, who was more or less the subject. And the story actually ended up being more about Rabbi Yudkin than his son-in-law. This man was amazing. I had all of my gear, like a full studio that I set up in his house. He's in his 90s. And as soon as the interview was over that I was photographing, I started packing up my gear to go downstairs. Now, mind you, this is up one flight of stairs to this guy's place. We're on the second floor. All this heavy gear, this 90-something-year-old man. And I start schlepping my gear out, and he's talking to me in Yiddish, and I'm answering as best as I can to his questions, like, are you married? Do you have kids? It's very, very sweet. He wants to be in a conversation. And I'm schlepping all my gear out because I have to run to New Jersey for another shoot. And he almost begs me to carry at least one thing to help me out the door, right? Oh. almost like, I mean, I gave him the lightest thing I could give him. And then he walks me down the stairs, you know, like one step down, all the way down the stairs. And then we get to the bottom.
Would have been quicker if you sorry.
We get to the bottom and he grabs my hand and dances with me around in a circle and like starts giving me all these brachas. It was amazing. He's really,
he looks amazing.
Out of all the experiences with like old Jews, this has to be the most magical, because I feel like that was like a lot of, like, I didn't deserve those blessings, but he was giving them.
Wow, beautiful.
Oh, yeah, that's it. So do you feel like you have all of these extra blessings from doing this project? Because that seems like you could really rack them up.
I should probably be asking everybody for a bracha, a blessing, while I'm there with them, but I don't even think about it. And also my wife always asks, okay, so you finally got this rabbi. Did you get a selfie with the rabbi? And I'm like, I don't ever do the selfies with the rabbi. I never get a selfie with anybody. Like, I'm not the guy holding up the phone going, hey, hold on. Like, I don't do that.
Okay, separate question, and we're going to have to wrap it up soon, but separate question, as somebody, and I've seen you in action, he spends a lot of time setting up backdrops and setting up lights and setting up gels and setting up filters. What do you make of the selfie culture that anyone just grabs a camera and clicks?
I think it's great. I think it's awesome. I'm so glad that people...
You feel the medium has been sullied or muddied, or
not at all? In fact, I think it's,
there's really room for everyone.
You know, when Kodak invented the brownie, suddenly everybody had a camera and everybody's shooting, and the same thing is happening with cell phones, even Sherry's to a much greater degree. The best part about it is that how many cell phone pictures are actually great pictures?
Right.
Really?
Right.
How many?
Right.
One out of 1,000.
Besides the ads that iPhone likes to show. Yeah, and my pictures never look like that. So, Sherry, if you have to pick one, what's your favorite rabbi picture besides me?
It's hard, but I'm going to have to go actually with the one that you said was a comedian and was doing the orphanage, because it kind of reminds me of some portraits that I've seen of Tom Petty, actually. Like, it's that kind
that was
of
like, don't come around here no more.
Yeah,
video.
Yeah. I know it's the hat, but it's also it's kind of like not exactly fisheye, but do you know what I'm talking about?
It's a wide angle extreme,
yeah,
kind,
yeah,
of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it's very rock and roll, and I love it. And it's a nice, you know, I know that you're capturing all of the different personalities with the rabbis, but it's, you know, it's just so. This one's just so crazy and full of life, and it's not, they're all unexpected, but it's not what you, I wouldn't have expected to see this shot in the project, is what I'm trying to say. So
it's
cool.
It's a bit out of the box compared,
yeah,
to the rest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I like that.
Okay, so if I had to pick one, I they're all amazing, by the way. And just to let you know that when I was in college, I studied film history, but I did take a course in photography. And it really kind of opened me up as a creative. And it was around that time that I kind of fell into the work of Roman Vishniak and his incredible collection called A Vanished World, and which really is, I think, the last sort of remains a documentation of shtetl life and shtetl culture. Yeah. I definitely am getting some Vishniak vibes. Is that with Roman Vishniak, because he was inspirational to you?
Absolutely. Totally falls in line and is in accord with what I was saying earlier about the Codex Judaic and all that stuff. And Roman Vishniak, this is really cool stuff. I mean, I love Roman Vishniak. He's a major character.
Amazing
character. 1935 to 1938, the Jewish American Joint Distribution Committee funded his documentation of Jews living in Eastern Europe and Germany, and that's really the last document that we have of those communities. So I've been accused of like being, oh, you must be the Roman Vishniak of the next generation, and
not a bad thing to be accused of.
But you know,
I've been accused of far worse.
Do tell.
We'll save that for another podcast.
But the you know, I for sure think the Rabbi Project is a document that needs to live in perpetuity and speak to a certain generation, a certain place in time. Absolutely.
Before we get into your favorite, have you printed these and had them in a gallery? So
part of what we're doing with the Rabbi Project is to produce a traveling exhibition of mural-sized prints, and there's going to be audio that goes with some of them. There's going to be video installations. It's going to be a multimedia affair.
I know an incredible art gallery in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, that would love to have this work.
Starts with an H.
Starts with an H, ends with an S. And, I mean, we'd take a small nominal 10%, but I think I would love to display your work in our gallery synagogue. I think right now we have one up. It's a friend of mine, Rabbi Dovber Pinson. I think this may be my favorite because it's the only one which is doesn't have the studio backdrop. It's outside. And I know Rabbi Pinson is known to be a scholar of the mystical, esoteric side of Judaism. And the fact that it's outside, it's at night, and there's sort of lights around him.
But
it's natural street lighting. And I think it does, it's like sort of sparks. I think this does kind of fit very much Rabbi Pinson's personality. If you could just tell me a little bit about this particular photograph and why you decided to take it into the streets.
That decision was made on the fly. his space down in the Gowanus is an amazing space, but at the time it was in complete it wasn't picturesque, let's say. So when I got down there with my gear, my lighting and whatever, I looked at the space and I'm like, this isn't going to work. So I asked him politely if he'd go outside. So I set up one of my lights outside to sort of mimic a street light, cuz the street lights are amber, they're disgusting. So that the light that's on him is actually a strobe. But, it's outside. And I really played around with it and made sure that I had this sort of, like, play of the street lights or, like, the, you know, like, mystical lights sort of glowing around him, all these orbs. And it works for him. You said it.
It's a beautiful, beautiful piece. Okay, finally, Marco, I'm not asking you to pick one because it's like asking you to pick one of your children. It's, you know, you it's something, it's too personal, too personal to separate. But if there's one particular photograph that perhaps sticks with you, I think maybe you've already discussed one, but if you, any particular overriding memory or image that you'd like that kind of sticks out to you?
Yeah, one of the first pictures I took was Rabbi Adin Evan Yisrael Steinsaltz.
Oh, wow.
Rabbi Steinsaltz. So if you go up to the top of
this
list.
For those listeners that don't know, Rabbi Steinsaltz is really one of the defining scholars of our generation, translated the entire Talmud, and is a winner of, I believe, the Israel Prize of scholarship. And
he was asked to head the Sanhedrin. Like, if they were going to recreate the Sanhedrin, he said, sure, and then he backed out.
I was actually asked, but I said, I'm watching Overboard with Sherry, but...
widescreen.
Widescreen. How did you procure such a photograph? And if you could talk a little bit about photographing Rabbi Steinsaltz, who is... I have met him. He is an absolute genius, but he does have rather a cynical sense of humor. So
he's a bit gruff.
Right, he can be rough around the edges, so but with an absolute heart of gold. If you have any recollections of that photograph.
I think he was too tired at the time to be salty, actually. This was taken at like almost 11 o'clock at night. He was talking a whole day at Queens College for a Jewish Learning Institute event. And I went to that event with permission of the organizers to go and photograph some of the rabbis there that I thought were interesting. This is actually way at the beginning of the project. This is already almost five years ago. I had to wait for him till the end of the day. Everything was going late. All the organizers were telling everybody to get out.
Jewish,
and his talk went the latest. And I had a studio set up in a hallway underneath his auditorium that was like a hallway with lockers on either side. It was a school. And I set up a backdrop that I could just pull down like a window shade. And I had my studio gear and everything set up there. And I had that set up with the studio backdrop rolled up. So I ran into the auditorium because I knew it was coming to a conclusion. I talked to his assistant, who was Rabbi Alush, I think. And I told him, I said, I've been taking pictures of everybody here, all the rabbis, as much as I can. And I really came here to take Rabbi Steinsaltz's portrait. I have the studio behind the auditorium. Would you please ask him if he's willing to do it? So he was really gracious. He walked off set. Like, everybody swarms him after he's talking, of course. So the swarm had barely dispersed when he sort of walked through it. Again, it was late. I'm sure he just wanted to go home. Or to his sister's house or sister-in-law. He was visiting family right after. Anyway, so he comes over and he shakes my hand. Nice to meet you. I said, okay, please walk this way to the set. And the moment I walked him into the set, I pulled down the backdrop behind him, like one of those shades, like this thing. And it was suddenly just me and him there, and him and I. And I pick up the camera and he looks at me and he goes, I suppose you're going to tell me how to pose like this way or that way or hold my head or smile, whatever. I said, actually, I think I just like photograph you just as you are. And he says, just as I am. You should have photographed me when I was a 4-year-old boy. I said, why? Why? He said, because I had a beautiful full head of blonde hair. So that's where it started. I told him, I said, you know what, let's just take your portrait as a wizened sage that you are. So he sat down in a chair and I had the computer popped up to the left and he smiled and laughed at the picture as it came on. That's actually the portrait that I love the most, the one that's on the screen.
Marco Deshev, we want to thank you for coming on the Hipsid podcast. I don't think in all the years that Sherry's been here, there's been so many rabbis on. Have you ever had this many rabbis on your television screen, Sherry?
No, but you know, this is why we do this show. You know, we're bringing it in.
It's a major kiddush Hashem after all the exactly. Goldie Hawn, Kurt Russell movies.
Yep. And a final note, the reason I have Overboard 2 times is because I love that movie and I forgot that I had a copy. But also, I am such a VHS aficionado that if you notice, there's different releases. So there's the original release with the artwork and then there's a reissue at a later time. So what that means is that there's different distributors. Different distributors means different artwork, which also means different previews. Part of my collection and my general trailers. Nerding out is it's all about the trailers. And so actually, if I when I become a rich eccentric millionaire, right now I just have the eccentric part down, I will actually have, you know, multiple copies of my favorite VHS tapes for that reason alone, because I find that fascinating.
Thank you for that, Sherry. At the Hipsid podcast, we believe in celebrating high art and low art. So for the first time in the history of the podcast medium, we are celebrating both reissue of the VHS copy of Overboard plus the Rabbi Project. Marco Deshev, we want to thank you for your incredible creativity. This is an amazing, amazing compendium of rabbis that will live on in perpetuity for many years to come. Finally, I want to thank Mia for coming on the show. Thank you, Mia.
Thank you for having me.
Any final thoughts on the Rabbi Project?
I think that it's a very, very powerful project, and I'm very happy to be exposed to it.
Beautiful. So, Marco, finally, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
It's been inspiring. It's been amazing. If you could just tell some of the listeners how to find you, how to connect with you.
Okay, the easiest way is to go to therabbiproject.com. And if you want to do a lot of spelling, you can go to marco-dev.com, which basically leads to the same place.
Really, truly, truly inspiring. We're going to close out the podcast. Sherry has her book of quotes over here. So we're going to ask Sherry to close out with an inspiring, artistic quote to inspire the listeners. And this is me, Rabbi Simcha, saying good night. Good night, and over to Cheryl.
All right, well, a lot of the processes have been revealed with the different artists we have on the Hipsid podcast, but here's a quote. I read somewhere that one of the most important attributes of a successful art dealer, sorry, this book is more about the dealers than the artists, is to be able to keep a secret.
I have no idea what that means, but thank you, Sherry. Keeping it real and closing the deal. Okay, thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Marco. Thank you, Mia. It's amazing. And God bless to the audience. That's a weird thing to say. There we go.
Hipsid, the podcast, is recorded and produced by Rabbi Simcha and Sherry Barkley. Please like and subscribe on iTunes. Thank you. Bye.